You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Bitcoin's dumping. Strategic Bitcoin reserve on the docket. Pets' heads are falling off. We're back with John Carvalho. It's been a while, sir. It's great to see you.
Yes, sir. How you been?
Been well. I'm tired. Went over to that Bitcoin Mena conference last week. I'm still a little jet lagged.
I didn't follow it too closely. It's like once I have my last conference for the year, I like unplug and that's it.
No, what was your last? Was your last one Riga?
No, Plan B, Lugano.
Yeah. Riga was fun. I forgot. Memories flooding back.
Yeah.
What's our panel called that we always end up together? Unpopular opinions.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. And
you had a very
sometimes it's just
opinion.
mostly popular opinions, but yeah. None of my opinions are popular, you know.
You had a pretty unpopular one this week with your BIP, sir. Should we start there? Or do you?
Yeah, I would say that's not really, I didn't mean that to be why I'm here, but I guess that's what people will expect to hear. And I haven't been on any other podcast to talk about it. I'm pretty sure we talked about it last time or something very similar in the past.
Yeah, we definitely covered the millisats thing. Like millisats don't exist.
It's all the same thing. About a year ago, after thinking about it, we like to rethink UX a lot when we work on BitKit Wallet, which is our mobile app, Bitcoin only with Lightning in there, with a self-custodial Lightning node inside. And one of the things we realized is just that like sats is actually kind of confusing for people. And we were trying to make an app that would, you know, ideally be for anyone. And then when you get into the more I would talk about like my good morning tweets and these little like Bitcoin misconceptions and things, the more I realized that the way that we treat the 21 million and these quote unquote decimal places has actually served to miseducate like the vast majority of Bitcoiners on how Bitcoin even works. Most people don't even know what a BIP is. Most people don't even know what my BIP is trying to do and are angry. If you want, I can overview some of these things or you can let me know any questions you have.
Let's just overview it. Why'd you write the BIP? What did you say in the BIP for those who are unaware of it? And what is the ultimate goal?
Well, I guess maybe I'll even start with what is a BIP, because I think a lot of people don't even know what it really is. It's just a specification, just basically text on a page that explain how to do something. It's not a rule. It's not a change to Bitcoin. It's not even a standard, like, you know, the difference between a standard and a spec is simply popularity. It's just how many people use it. A spec doesn't have to become standard. It just is a specification on how to accomplish those things. So when something gets put into the BIP repositories, you know, the area of GitHub that is currently managed by a few core developers who volunteer to manage it, it doesn't mean that like now it's official. It doesn't mean people have to do it. It doesn't mean anything really. It just means now you can find that information in that place. That's it. And so this bit, many BIPs are much more technical. They're more for code and things like this, but a lot of BIPs are superficial. For example, using seeds, that's a BIP. That's not, you know, a Bitcoin rule. It's not how the Bitcoin protocol works. It actually has nothing to do with the Bitcoin protocol. It's just a way of storing data. And so because it's a useful way of storing data for people that use Bitcoin, it's a BIP. And so now people can refer to a standard way to create seed words and, you know, choose which words to include and this kind of thing. So there's like commonality across applications when they do implement it. And so the BIP, but some BIPs are even less technical. They're just strictly about just explaining what to do and how to do it and how to think about certain aspects with Bitcoin user experience. My BIP refers to an older, similar BIP from Jimmy Song, BIP 176, which is just simply promoting the concept of bits, which is the idea where some people think that we add, and even though we currently have a decimal place at 8 places, we would add another one at 2 places. And that one would kind of emulate dollar precision, right? So you would have a whole thing at the 3rd place and then 2 decimals, kind of resembling how fiat works. The problem with all of this is none of this is how Bitcoin works. There are no decimals. It is an integer-based system. And actually, the only way it could even defend there being a limit on how many units there are is to be an integer-based system. Because otherwise, you would have infinite divisibility. You would have essentially the pizza problem that Francis Coppola imagined. But she didn't understand. But she didn't understand Bitcoin. She didn't understand that it's not actually divisible. There is no pizza problem. There's just roughly 2.1 quadrillion units. And at some point in the past, a kind of aesthetic decimal place was put into that position. Another piece of trivia is where there's 8 quote unquote places now, there actually used to only be 2, and 6 more were added very early on in the Bitcoin days, because I believe it was Hal Finney didn't think there would be enough precision. And he was right, right? Like, we're obviously having significant value below 2 decimal places of Bitcoin, right? Sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit, but there's a lot of nuance to all of this and how to kind of circular, kind of triangulate the idea, which comes down to a lot of people think that you could add more decimal places if you wanted. In other words, you could have a millisat. It's not actually possible. A lot of people think that adding more decimal places or removing it somehow affects the quantity of Bitcoin. It doesn't. Actually, adding decimal places would be what would affect the quantity of Bitcoin, because it's an integer system. So you can actually multiply the units. You can't divide them. And so that's the biggest aspect of the motivation for the BIP, simply to correct how we portray Bitcoin so people actually have a chance of understanding it properly. The rest of the stuff is just kind of bonuses. It's like, yeah, people are worried about unit bias, so let's mention that, you know, this would overcome some of that, you know, unit bias. And there are some other little perks like that and nuances about it. In summary, the reaction has been, I would say the first day, 50-50, where some people were very interested and excited about it, and some people were against it and giving reasonable feedback as to why. The second day and since then, it just got more and more toxic. People just not even reading the BIP, not understanding what a BIP is, thinking I'm trying to kill Bitcoin or something, thinking that if this passes, they'll have to do it, or that somehow this should never pass. They won't run this on their node. Just none of these things are accurate as to what's even happening. It's just simply, hey guys, sometimes users get confused if you say sats, because they think they're dealing in Bitcoin, and when you say sats, they don't know that's an abbreviation for Satoshi, and they don't even know who Satoshi is sometimes. And even worse, you're treating it as if it's a different unit, but it's actually the only unit. There are no other units in Bitcoin. Everything else is a denomination. So BTC is a denomination of Bitcoin units. Some people call Bitcoin units Satoshis, but they're not decimals. You know what I mean? They're not fractions of a Bitcoin. They're actually the only whole units in the system. Sorry for the rant, but hopefully that covers most of it.
No, it does. In terms of the BIP being a specification, is it more geared towards end users or developers building so they have better context when?
I would say, since it's specs, it's most like it's just as much for product builders as developers. Or in other words, when you say developers, it means more than protocol developers. It means people building anything that relies on Bitcoin. A lot of BIPs are just simply that. It's just how to implement Bitcoin in a way that is successful or customary or recommended. Which, by the way, Seedwords Bitcoin Core does not recommend. So that's an example of a very popular BIP that has been that is basically a standard at this point. But it's actually not recommended for use by the BIP reviewers because it's an incomplete solution. It doesn't address various problems, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, there's so much nuance to the BIPs. It's just best thinking of them as web pages with information on them.
Yeah. Shout out to Amir Taki for creating the BIP process, the first ever BIP. And it's, if I recall correctly, inspired by Python's proposal process as well.
I don't recall. I do recall Amir Taki being the inspiration for it. I think Luke also carrying the torch for a while as well, Luke Dasher. But yeah, Amir has only recently started commenting on Bitcoin again. I don't know if he's coming back or just drawing attention to his own projects, but yeah, he's around.
As it comes back to your BIP. Oh no, I like sats.
I'm pretty sure you guys popularized it. You know what I mean?
Like stacking sats, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that like sats is evil, saying Satoshis is evil. I'm just saying as a software thing, we tested it. Like we did it in the BitKit wallet. We just have a Bitcoin symbol and then just the full units. Literally no one is confused. It's just a non-issue to confuse people because people know that there's such a huge gap between eight places, you could never make a mistake. Like you would never think I was sending you a million Bitcoin, right? But you might think I'm selling you a million, you know, base units. So there's just no confusion involved. And as far as like sats, like I think that stay humble, stack sats is one of the few good Bitcoin memes. It's, you know, I have no issue with these things and I can't kill it. And it's not my goal to kill it. It's just simply to say, if your goal is to make an application that is to be accessible to normal people or most people or any people that might be appropriate to the BIP, then here's how you could do it. That's all.
Yeah. That's fascinating too. Getting the user feedback or the observation that you've had with
Some of it was so backwards, man. Like people, so I have like literally one reply after another. One saying it's too early to do this. People will never approve it. It's too early. And the next guy, it's too late. If you had suggested this 5 years ago, then it would be okay. And all of the arguments are like this. Just like people are mostly arguing from their discomfort or their emotion or their tribe. And they're not even reading the BIP in many cases. But that doesn't mean I expect everybody to like approve it or support it. All I want is for it to be fairly treated as a specification and included into the repository. So other people like me in the future can refer to it. That's it.
Yeah. It is, the integer base clarification is important, like in the unit base, like there are these units in it. I think, yeah, people obviously
People think Lightning millisats are real. It all stems from this. It all stems from this idea that there's 21 million in eight decimal places and that Satoshis are pieces of Bitcoins, which is just not actually how any of it works. And so people think that that millisats are like an innovation of Lightning. But they're not. They're just a credit system that some Lightning devs arbitrarily decided would be interesting to include. Like they didn't figure out how to split Satoshis. They just included a credit system because they were speculating that people would want to trade on sub Satoshi levels, which by the way, I think will never be necessary.
It doesn't. Is anybody doing that right now?
Arbitrarily, like because Lightning implementations support it. Actually removing it from your flow is not that easy. And so, for example, you could, if you base your fees on a percentage, you could end up with half Satoshi amounts, right? Or sub Satoshi amounts because it's percentages. And thus your channel and your relationship with your counterparty is going to support that naturally. Now, the risk here is obviously super duper low because millisats are basically worthless, but it's still wrong. You know, it's still a bad idea that people think that there will be millisats. Even the idea that they will need them is kind of faulty and not based in anything reality.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah. The last time you came, maybe it wasn't the last time or one of the times you came on before and explained the millisats, it made a lot of sense as a credit system and trying to force it. And the idea of millisats, people need to send an amount of money that low is sort of not materializing.
It's mostly just a pet peeve of mine, man. Like I see Bitcoiners making memes and they make the memes wrong and then they teach the people wrong. And then I have to try to explain to them and they think I'm crazy. And I'm like, I don't want to live in a world where people think I'm crazy because I'm accurate, you know? And so here's how you can be accurate if you want to join me. That's all.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial.
Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC. What are your thoughts on this strategic reserve that's being floated right now? Are you bullish on America now? Are you bullish on America now?
I am bullish. I am bullish on Trump and the Doge and, you know, all that stuff going on. I am hopeful. I am glad that it happened this way. I'm glad to see a turnaround. I'm glad to see peak clown world has ended. I hope that it's not replaced with some kind of other ridiculousness. But nonetheless, it's much more promising than we've seen anywhere in the world landscape for at least 5 years. So it's really nice to see that. As far as a strategic reserve, I literally just don't care. Like, I just feel like chasing politicians is so lame. Watching Bitcoiners like care about this stuff and share their opinions and their predictions, it's just so much LARPing to me. I just feel like, okay, like if some politician can get some voters to make themselves more likable and whatever, like, I'm not surprised. But Bitcoin is not for the white market. All white market alignment is going to be regrettable at some point. And I have no interest in trying to help the current government succeed at being, you know, having more resources and being more involved in Bitcoin. It's just not my interest. It's just not why I'm here. I make the things we make at Synonym, and the things that reason I care about Bitcoin is so we can do things without the government. You guys have fun. I don't even know if you're part of the group. I'm just saying, whoever is interested, leave me out of it. Have fun. I don't care what the outcome is, honestly.
Well, let's dive into that. Like the white market versus black market, or market outside the government's purview. How do you see this playing out? Or what tools are necessary to enable people
for the
to
audience
outside?
And for nuance, I guess I'll define white market and black market a little bit. It just means sanctioned and not sanctioned. It doesn't mean good or bad or evil or clean. It just means stuff the government allows and stuff the government isn't involved with. That's it. Bitcoin as a black market money, as a market issued money. In other words, the people issued it and manage it, not the government, not a central organization. That makes it a black market money, and its core utility is being a money that is not part of the system. If you go and take that money and you put it in the system, you're not accomplishing anything. You're just, you know, participating in the old system. You're not helping Bitcoin. You're not helping Bitcoiners. You're just creating something that might have to unwind at some point, because ultimately the government is like antithetical to Bitcoin, and they're not aligned with Bitcoin. And any amount of having Bitcoin in white markets, you're just going to lose some or all of the qualities of Bitcoin to have it in that white market.
I'm trying to think, because Bitcoin is money for enemies, right? Many people perceive the government as an enemy. Me, to an extent. I don't think the government works in my best interest. Who knows what will happen with Trump, but we'll pull on that thread later in this discussion, because that's part of the reason where we initially decided to talk. Some worries I saw around digital identity, but if Bitcoin is this pristine asset running on this peer-to-peer distributed protocol, wouldn't it make sense that governments would adopt it too at some point?
I don't know what pristine asset means. That sounds like a podcaster term. No offense. But,
you were a podcaster at one point too. Let's not forget.
Yeah, and I will be again, most likely. But hopefully you understand what I'm saying. Like it's a term that emerges from the culture, not from some sort of scientific analysis or anything like this. It's just a meme, and so. Sorry, what was the last thing you said?
It wouldn't make sense, like the game theory. When if Bitcoin is a good money, a better money.
Game theory. This is another meme. Nobody's using any game theory in Bitcoin. Like, game theory is like a mathematical process for, you know, showing proofs for probabilities of situations when you have all the information. Like, it's a useless term in most conversations.
The incentives. The incentives. Better way to put it. You know, I'm not a literalist. So aren't the incentives such that...
So you're right. Pristine money incentives, game theory. Look, anybody can use Bitcoin, right? Not everybody can use Bitcoin, another topic, but anybody could use it. Me saying I have no interest in the government or that white market Bitcoin is untenable is not to be conflated with, thus we must disallow the government from using Bitcoin and try to stop them from using it and be mad when they use it. No, it's just saying that in the grand scheme of things, in how Bitcoin works and where it sits in the world, if you actually are trying to optimize for anything to do with its existence, you wouldn't care so much about trying to optimize its place with governments. You would care more about protecting it from that situation. And so if a government having, you know, governments getting into this, I guess it's fun if you want to like, fantasize about a future where China is, you know, trying to get more mining power than the US and trying to get more Bitcoin than the US and Russia's trying to do the same thing and everybody's trying to like outgame each other. That's just not how the world works, in my opinion. Like, it just, you're creating this fantasy where only people care about the thing that only you care about. And you, the audience, you know, whoever, Bitcoiners, like, there's so much nuance to the economy and there's so many outlets for liquidity and for, you know, investment and for trade. It's just never going to be only a Bitcoin situation. And so I don't, like, one side wants to worry about, you know, Bitcoin might undermine the dollar or Bitcoin, the government undermine Bitcoin. Look, that's the thing I care about. I don't care about undermining the dollar or whether we should stop that or prevent that or any of these things. It's all bullshit. Like, these people are, you know, way above our pay grade. They don't care anything about what we're talking about. We have no influence on it. We have no way to predict it or understand it. So let's just try to focus on, you know, having a Bitcoin economy or a Bitcoin world that we can opt out of all these things. And that's what we do with Synonym with our atomic economy concept. It's just this idea that we can make a parallel society that people could opt into if they don't find a place in the legacy society.
Yeah. Now, you said something there. You don't care. We should care more about the government undermining Bitcoin than Bitcoin undermining the dollar. Which, have you been following James O'Byrne's commentary at all?
Yeah, it's embarrassing, honestly.
Why?
Because all he wants is his toys, and he's just going to keep, you know, making fun of people and crying at people and making excuses and spinning narratives until somebody gives him the toy that he wants. He's not, his incentives are not for Bitcoiners.
So for context here, James wrote a BIP, OpVault, which would provide the network, if merged in, a very narrow use case for a very popular topic in the Bitcoin developer world these days, which is covenants.
I take issue with that framing. With who?
Some Bitcoin developers. I'm not in any rush to get covenants in. I do think James's recent commentary has been interesting. I guess the way to frame this part of discussion would be like, do you think Bitcoin needs anything like a covenant or a substantial upgrade in the future? And if so, would the government getting in potentially muddy the ability to do that at some point?
Would you ever outsource your decision to me? You know what I mean? If I said, yeah, I think we do need it, then would you say, well, if John thinks we need it, then it's true? Would you ever do that?
No, but I would.
Do you think I would ever do it for you?
No, but I respect
you. Do you think I would ever do it for James? I'm trying to get to a point. So, in other words, people who make decisions for themselves don't use other people to make decisions, right? And so the only thing you need to ask yourself in regards to a fork is whether you need it, right? You don't have to speculate on whether you think we could solve UTXO sharing or whether you think this will solve scaling or any of these things. You just have to ask yourself, do I think this will solve problems for me? I don't think Covenants is going to solve any problems for me. I don't think it's going to solve any problems, like any notable problems for my users of our products. I think that, you know, if we had Covenants tomorrow, 5 to 10 years from now, there would be some stable use cases that you would see appear in some wallets. That would be it. You would not see some dramatic ability for people to all use Bitcoin and transact on chain, you know, as much as everybody would love to. You will not see true scale. Basically, the idea that UTXO sharing even solves scaling is unproven right now. I feel like we have been running a test, to an experiment, basically, to see if Lightning can prove that we can scale with UTXO sharing. And I think mostly all we proved with Lightning so far is that we can do high-frequency transactions between peers. I don't think we've proven UTXO scaling, because it's when fees went really high, people were scared to close channels, scared to buy channels. When fees are saturated, it becomes dangerous to use layers. There's all kinds of weird trade-offs that make it express much more, you know, diminished than we thought it would. And then there's also future problems that could come with Lightning with scaling, as far as sourcing liquidity, you know, things like this. So I think that just the concept of pretending that anybody knows what's best for Bitcoin is the folly here. Nobody knows what's best. James doesn't know what's best. Covenants lovers don't know what's best. And even if they did, they would, as evidenced by my attempt to get people to just merely move a decimal place and get them to even read the BIP or understand any aspect of what I was trying to do, I think that's very clear evidence that you have no hope of getting users to consent to Covenants or a soft fork, right? So all you're really doing is you're saying, I really strongly believe that there should be a clearer political process for me to do what's best for Bitcoin. That's what he's asking for. And I don't think he deserves that reputation. I think very few people deserve that reputation. Basically, the same people that would be trusted to be maintainers are probably the only people that should be taken seriously in this regard. And even them, they can be just as risky. So sorry for all the rambling, but it's just, I just feel like the idea, the way people look at this is just so off, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, the whole emergence of ordinals, inscriptions, that whole thing has forced me over the last couple of years to pause and think about, particularly on Rabbit Hole Recap, how we talk about any soft fork proposal, because I learned, we were talking about Taproot, pretty adamant about it, and quickly became apparent that I had no idea what the ramifications were, or all the ramifications were.
I wasn't against Taproot when it happened, but I stayed out of it because I just couldn't think of anything that it did for me. You know what I mean? Like, I liked, like, back then people kept saying, oh, people won't know that you're making Lightning channels. That's the cool thing. It's like, oh, that sounds cool. I don't mind that. Cool. But I didn't, like, run a Taproot activation or whatever, and I didn't put it in my profile and do all these things to make it happen, because it just felt like Taproot just slipped in out of apathy. Like, nobody particularly needed it. Nobody particularly hated it. And it just kind of snuck in there. That's risky, you know, that things like that can happen. And I'm glad that it's not happening, but it did make me kind of perk up and be like, I should pay attention. And that was around the time that Jeremy started aggressively promoting CTV. He was actually trying to get it into the Taproot activation, I remember. And he was pissing off core devs back then. And that was like 2022 or something. I don't remember what the year was, but you get the idea. I think that you can't change Bitcoin without oppressing people, without politically overbearing them. And so changing Bitcoin needs to be something that comes from the market. If we want to make changes to Bitcoin, they should be presented with data, with experiments, probably need to put it on a shitcoin first. Like, the standards just need to be so much higher than anybody's willing to admit.
Yeah. Are there any changes that you would like right now?
No. The ordinals thing didn't bother me, honestly. I think it was nice to see people are going to think I'm crazy, but like, it was nice to see an example where somebody was using Bitcoin in a way that people didn't like, and people were trying to stop them and they couldn't. right? Like that's, I think that's awesome. Like I loved seeing people act, fix the filter retards, acting like they could do anything about it. People trying to like, oh, like the sky is falling and all this bullshit. And it's like, guys, they paid the fee. That's what we do to stop spam. There's no conversation here. If you want, if you don't like what they're doing, and you then figure out how they're doing it, and figure out a way to change Bitcoin to stop it. But you can't just like, the mempool isn't going to stop them. The mempool isn't even enforced, and they're just going to make private mempools. If you try, you're just going to, every time you try to like control the mempool, you're going to make the mempool worse, which has been proven true, you know, a few times in the past few years. Yeah, sorry, I'm ranting.
Yeah, no, yeah, I completely agree. And well, I'm not going to go out and buy any ordinals or inscribe anything to the chain, because I just think the aesthetics are bad. I don't see the value in it. There's nothing.
My concern is that like, what's going to happen if the blocks get too full for too long? We're always going to identify the type of transaction we like the least and be mad at them. Is that what's going to happen? Like, in other words, so let's say like bankers start filling all the blocks because they're making ETF movements or whatever, and we, and normal people can't afford it. We're all going to start hating the banks now, right? And it's, that's what I think with that, that's what happened with ordinals. It was just, they're taking my block space and I don't like them. Well, get used to it, because you're never going to be like in full agreement of how people are using it with Bitcoin. And you can't stop them from using it as an abstraction, because that's all it is. There's no value in there. It's just an anchor.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole kvetching over that. And it's like funny looking. Who knows? Maybe there will be a reemergence of inscription activity in L2, Season 2, whatever, runes, ordinals, whatever.
Probably at the top, you know? Seems like there's always like a little shitcoin wave at the top after Bitcoin tops, people start cycling. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're already actually strategically, literally, intentionally preparing to have like a second wave at the top, you know?
Yeah. No, it was a lot of screaming and kvetching over something that turned out not to be as big of a problem.
Another issue with all this is it becomes very difficult for a person to separate what would be an attacker from somebody who's naive or egomaniacal. Like, a victim can't tell the difference, right, about whether it's malice or whether it's a mistake. So, like, when I see, like, James behaving this way, I just start thinking, like, why is he so aggressive? Like, why does he – I mean, I know he put time into it, but, like, why is he burning bridges with people? Why is he – being aggressive about it? Like, there's not an urgency. The fees aren't astronomical. Like, it's just a feature. It's a fun thing that people want to be able to use. I'm guessing there's some aspect of these people's careers tied to this, with like Jeremy and, you know, maybe their grant flows. I don't know what it is, but it's like, it's totally inappropriate to the situation. And so I have to wonder, like, are these people actually attackers? Like, are they hired by J.P. Morgan or the CIA? Or how would I ever know the difference, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. And we'll say James is a good friend. I'm sure you guys are cordial as well.
Don't tarnish your own reputation. Yeah. Be careful who you align with.
How would you, like, I guess what the, for OpVault particularly, the way James presents it is you can create conditions that would make something like an exchange unhackable. So I'd guess you'd need the exchanges to really demand it, and then get broader Bitcoin users to accept that it may be something that is good.
Well, then maybe that's probably where his motivation is. His whoever's paying him probably would like to differentiate as a provider and say, when you use our service, we can't be hacked, and you know, we have a different grade of service. So maybe that's what it is. It's a product motivation. The sound of that, I have no issue with, but the process here is totally unacceptable.
Yeah. Do you think the process, I mean, that's, I talk to any core developer these days, they think the process is not as straightforward as maybe it should be. Do we need something like a benevolent
dictator?
Just
always literally governance. It's like, you're just literally saying you want more strict, clearer governance and politics in Bitcoin. And the more you formalize politics and governance in Bitcoin, the more censorable it becomes. So yeah. Do you want that trade-off? I don't want that trade-off. I'd rather have James crying for 20 years than have that trade-off.
Do you think ossification is a possibility? Like, from here
no,
on?
No. I think that's another meme. Ossification is just for the moment, right? Like, nobody can ever say there's never going to be another change to Bitcoin, right? Like, there's not some way to predict that future or ensure that future. I think that ossification is just probably when nobody's using Bitcoin anymore. Otherwise, it's just a temporary state. Yeah. We're always in consensus, right? Like, we already have consensus right now. We found it. Everybody agrees. And when covenants people make proposals, they're out of consensus. They're saying they want to change Bitcoin. They want a different Bitcoin. And users have to assess whether they even care, whether they need that risk. And this is all speculation. It's not like there's data. It's not like there's examples. It's just totally, totally speculative.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I need covenants right now, personally.
Well, if you did, you would be having problems, right? Like, it's just imaginary. Yes, it would be cool if Bitcoin could do things that more engineers could impress people with, but that's not why we're here.
Yeah. It does make you wonder that, like, I imagine it's coming from a perceived or a look into the future and perceiving.
No, it's totally personally incentive driven. This is not coming from benevolence. There's no way. They are not signaling benevolence in any shape or form. Okay. I don't see that. Do you see that? I mean,
Yeah, I'll get the benefit of the doubt and see.
But there's so much aggression to a personal purpose. Like, he's overstating, like, burning bridges with his peers, overstating things. Like, this is not a – nobody has a vendetta for benevolence.
Yeah. Now, I feel for a lot of the core devs that have been at it for a while, but like you mentioned, you got to get.
Like, imagine if I was yelling at people for not accepting my BIP. Like, if I was like, core devs are holding back my BIP. They don't want people to understand how Bitcoin works. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to buy Bitcoin because of unit bias, and this is a huge problem. The price has crashed to under 100K, and it's all, you know what I mean? Like, I could just be dramatic too. But I'm not. I'm going to complain when people don't read it and don't understand it. But I'm not going to, like, force people or act like they're bad because they don't agree with me.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on our risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC. $40 off. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
How have things been at BitKits? And that's why we're here to talk. Really about
good, man.
Because I.
So we are 21 people now. It's the first time we've had kind of feeling like the full team, like all roles filled. We basically about a year ago we decided to re-architect Slashtags. For those of your audience who may have heard of that, this was our peer-to-peer web project before PubKey. And PubKey is our current one, spelled P-U-B-K-Y. The difference is basically that we were using the HyperCore stack, the hole punch stuff, and it was just way overkill for what our actual requirements were. Once we did some iterating on what we were doing and realized that what our actual requirements were to like make this atomic economy thing. The whole lazy replication of append-only logs in a purely peer-to-peer sense was not actually compatible with what we were trying to do. We were trying to figure out a way for people to safely gather as many people as possible. Basically, we want to make using servers safe. We don't want to make using servers obsolete. And that was a big change. And then also looking at the learning from the trends and, you know, plateaus of Noster, also learning from same likewise with Blue Sky and seeing that gives us a lot of advantage to kind of observe and adjust. And so I think that what we did was basically find what we thought was the ideal design from among our own research and among watching what our peers were doing, and basically spent a year making PubKey. And so PubKey Core is all open source right now, and it's the kind of protocol aspect stuff for doing our schemes. And then PubKey App is a app that kind of acts as an interface for all of these features, which is currently testing privately in the team, and we'll release that in Q1. I guess maybe that's a little bit of a summary of PubKey. Also with BitKit, we were in beta for a while, came out of beta in June. And released the app into the app stores. That was a long haul trying to get LDK working in the app, and not owning the whole stack, like having to depend on other teams and things like this is a much different situation than people realize, and it's a lot of work. But we finally got the app pretty stable, and that's also powered by a LSP called BlockTank that helps people buy channels and things like this. And, you know, route their payments effectively. And the reason why we connected recently is because you had made that tweet where you said that something around along the lines of Noster and Web5 fixing identity. And I needed to like nitpick your language because technically, as I said in my reply, Noster doesn't really try to solve identity so much as use keys to sign data, which it's still identity, but it's not an identity solution. Right. In other words, you can use it as an identity, but the result is that you have to almost have it be a disposable identity because that key gets put into every application and you have no way to like, you have no censorship resistant way, trustless way to change your key if you lose your key or this kind of thing. You just end up having to use the web. You are already using it in order to use those keys. And so with PubKey, what we do is we invented this thing called a public key domain. So basically you can use your public key as a domain name, literally. And so we made a DNS server that supports this, and we take your key and instead of signing all your data every time you do something, all you sign is your DNS record. So you take your key, you put a bunch of different endpoints, you say, oh, here is where you can find my web server. Here's where you can find my tweets. Here's where you can find my payment endpoints, whatever you want, just like regular DNS. And you sign that, and then you take that data and you put it in what's called mainline DHT. Mainline DHT is basically the largest, most decentralized network on the internet right now. It's depending on how you measure and which, you know, protocols are supported by the nodes, you've got somewhere between 2 and 20 million nodes in the network. The variance is because of, again, supporting different specs of what they actually, which kind of data they actually share. The nodes that we rely on, the minimum of them is roughly 2 million of them. And so we take this data, we put it in there, and what that achieves is now instead of having ICANN owning your domain, being able to censor your domain, take it away from you, whatever, you have your key as your domain and you have these millions of nodes that are storing just a small amount of data. And you can go look up your key in those nodes and they'll tell you where to find the data that you're looking for. So what this does is, when you are using, say, a server, you're using PubKey app and we decide to censor you, and what people have to understand is the host decides the rules. So when you use hosting, then you will be censored because legally hosts are required to censor you. And so to some degrees, not all, not to a subjective degree, but to, you know, for illegal data, like things like, you know, underage porn and things like this. So since we know that censorship is an inevitability and we know that people will always have a utility to gathering in one place, creating an exchange, a marketplace of ideas, social media, whatever it may be, then we know the situation we have to fix is what happens when somebody is censored and what is the best that we can do for them to be able to basically hot swap their service providers for ones that won't censor them or hot swap for hosting it themselves. And that's what PubKey and this whole system does, is it says, okay, even if somebody censors you, what happens is you just take your key, you update your records in the DHT, you update your DNS, and you say, okay, don't go there for my data anymore, go here. And that in here can be a different provider or self-hosting. And so we're just trying to make it totally safe to basically port yourself to any server or host yourself without losing anything and without even disruption from, you know, your followers or anything like this. Because immediately the application isn't going to look in that place for the data anymore. It's going to route through DNS to the new location. Hopefully that all makes sense.
Yeah. No, I was actually rocking that. And I think it's important too to add context why I sent that tweet out. So I was at Bitcoin Mania and then I hung around for a day in Abu Dhabi. They had the Abu Dhabi Finance Week event, and it was all TradFi, and it was their blockchain day. And I walked into the actual conference for two talks. One was Binance's new CEO, Jeremy Lehr, announcing the partnership of Circle and Binance, which was eh. And then the second panel was the CEO of Chainalysis, I think the head dev at Avalanche, and a couple other people. And on that second...
Sounds painful.
Yeah, it was. Well, that's why I sent the tweet out. Like, on the second panel, there, like, the Chainalysis guy was really leaning into... like government issued digital IDs that can run on these blockchains, and it like set a shiver of
I agree shock. With your sentiment. I'm remembering now their sentiment was basically, we got to figure this out before they do.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. I've always had that sentiment. I totally agree, because there's a dystopian kind of way to look at all of this where you think, okay, well, what if John really does make the absolute best way to do public keys as identities? And then the government just uses that. Like, the problem here is that what we've encountered is an inevitability that the government will use digital identity. And so the only hope we have at this point is to basically show people that you can use digital identity in a way that doesn't involve the government whatsoever, and it works just fine. And then when the government starts to be overbearing, we have that to compare it to. We can say, well, but I already do it like this. Why are you making me do it, but also give up all my privacy, you know, like in this kind of thing. So that's my hope, is that we can somehow stave off this inevitability of both the government requiring digital identity and requiring digital identity to use the internet, which is what will come after that. And so what we have to do is be able to show people that there are ways to connect to the internet without that, that there are ways to represent yourself digitally that do not require government ID, and present this kind of alternative society, because it's going to be the only way, that we're only hope we have.
Yeah. And I don't want to get too hippy dippy about it, but I literally had like a existential philosophical crisis where, like, identity, I am me, I know me, I have a conscience, I talk to myself, I think I have a soul, it's mine, like, nobody can take this from me. And like, the whole, once we get into the realm, it already exists today, like social security numbers and stuff like that, but like, it really, for some reason, maybe I'm overreacting, but like, it just felt very dystopian the way these people were talking about it on stage.
Well,
like,
it's dystopian because so much of our life is digital now. When so much of your life is digital and you rely so much on your digital connections, the idea that the government could not control your access to that is extremely dystopian. It's extremely scary. I think that, you know, unless we have some sort of major turnaround with the culture of government, like maybe Trump starts a romantic revolution that the world, you know, speaks of for 100 years, probably not. And there's going to be probably even within our lifetime a day where the government tells you that you need to be using a digital ID to connect to the internet. And that's really, really scary. That's, you know, I hope that by then, not only have we figured out digital identity without them, that we've figured out like totally user accessible mesh networking and things like this, because we have to always be these steps ahead of them, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's like the way they talk about it too, they're going to issue you a digital identity, and that's when it comes down, again, going back to
The hippie did.
I mean, they have the keys.
Yeah, it's like, no, the government shouldn't issue your identity. It is your identity. You should create the private public key pair that represents your identity.
I don't know how interesting it is, but there is nuance here. Like, you have to be careful not to conflate identity with like access or permissioning for things that do have rights. In other words, if I'm going to let you be on my server, I can require any level of identity I want, right? Or I just say, don't, you can't use my server. That's a scary part of how government could be involved. Reputation is a separate one. Like when we talk about identity, we're more talking about reputation than we are about government access to things, you know, in an official way. It's not an ID card, right? It's not an access thing. It's more of just how you anchor your real world reputation to your behaviors online. And so some people will use a sock puppet account, for example, because they don't want to attach the reputation of their behavior to their real identity. And that will thus devalue their value because they're not attaching, there's not actual skin in the game, right? They're going to behave differently. They're going to be valued differently by people. But if you use your real identity, you can develop real reputation and real trust. And that's extremely valuable. So there's a lot of nuance here where building a reputation is valuable and it is worth something and it's normal and trusting people is normal. What we want to be focusing on is giving people the best tools possible to figure out who to trust, who to give permission to, who to give access to, who to connect with, who to do business with, etc. We want all this self-regulating capability. We don't need the government getting in the way of the market, and that's all they're really going to be capable of doing.
So this is the nuance here, giving people the tools to build their reputation and decide who they associate with in the digital world versus the government issuing it and making those decisions for you in a top-down fashion.
Yeah. Like a big aspect of what we're doing with PubKey app, not the protocol level stuff, but the app level stuff, is we're also handling how we do algorithms differently. And so instead of just trying to figure out like, for example, Nostr has things where people will pick different algorithms and people can serve a different algorithm. That's obvious stuff. Blue Sky has it. We could do stuff like this in our platform as well. But what's more interesting is what we're doing, we're establishing what we're calling a semantic social graph. So there's an actual graph database created by indexers that takes posts and profiles of basically keys in the things that those keys create, whether they be files, articles, blogs, podcasts, doesn't matter, all types of different files, ultimately, and allows people to attach semantic tags to them, sort of like hashtags. And this is partly, you know, a remnant from what things we wanted to do with slash tags and why we called it slash tags back then. We ended up not being able to secure that name because it's a generic term, so we couldn't trademark it, and so we had to change it. That's another reason why we ended up with a different name with PubKey. But the idea there is like you are the algorithm. You and the people that you actually follow or whose opinions you care about have the ability to now curate data in any abstraction you want. And you can now, instead of getting a feed of like what we think you should see, you know, what my company thinks you should see, you get a feed of what you decide that you want to see. And it's a very relative to basically your web of trust. So basically, you know, you have like your circle of friends that are the closest to you, and then you have their friends, and you have the friends' friends. So these are like distances away. And so you can now filter your streams through these web of trust distances across semantic abstractions as well. So this gives you like this whole graph database that is highly, highly relative to where now you can take a perspective on the data. So it's like saying, show me the graph from this perspective. Show me the graph from that perspective. Weight things differently. It's like you control the algorithm and you decide which other people's algorithms to include on a granular level instead of a kind of whole feed level, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess it is. So I mentioned Nostr and Web5.
The idea is to match, basically, we're going to match data and match people. It's a matching system in the abstract. So it's like people, you heard like Web5 wanted to make a DEX. Well, we're making a DEX too, but in the abstract. We're saying the atomic economy is just like the ability to connect anybody over any abstraction across any network so they can deal with each other however they want to without requiring a middleman to give them permission.
Yeah. So I also said that to include Nostr. Obviously I'm on Nostr, following very closely
like it. Web 5, I had a conversation with Daniel from that project a few weeks ago. So they were top of mind. I guess I would throw Urbit into this mix too, to an extent, and now PubKey. In your mind, across all these projects, like Blue Sky, you can add now too. What is the path to like mass adoption, or how do these things succeed in your mind? Can they play together? Will they run in parallel? Is it good to have all of them competing? Are they competing?
It's a lot of questions. Yeah. Let me figure out a way to kind of circumnavigate this. So I think that we're all trying to solve problems for people, and you know, sometimes some of us get distracted with thinking our interests are actual problems when they're not. Like, for example, like most people on Nostr aren't censored, right? And most of the people that are censored probably would get censored anywhere because they're behaving like douchebags or whatever. Then there's this like subset of people that are actually censored and shouldn't be, and this kind of thing. So like when you talk about censorship resistance for social media, you're really talking about maybe, you know, 100,000 people in the world that actually you're solving a problem for. And even then you might not be, because the people they're trying to reach might not be in your platform. And so you're kind of just theoretically solving problems for in the interim. So like, if you think about like, what are the problems? Like, why are people using these things today? I think people use Nostr because it's like public Bitcoin chat. I think people use Blue Sky because it's public leftist chat. Democrat chat. It seems to be where people are splitting across cultural values much more than they're splitting across utilities. Truth Social. This was kind of made in reaction, in Rumble, made in reaction to censorship, but they can censor just as much as Twitter can, right? Like, it's just they censor differently. So what we've learned is there's a competition now for platforms that will censor only what's legally required, right? So that's kind of the nuance here, is if you only censor what's legally required, now you're differentiating from Twitter or Facebook or these other things, and so you have a utility. Now you see Blue Sky, they're specializing in extra censorship. They want to be a very curated, very safe place for the people that, you know, agree with what's safe there. And so you can see, again, this is all very much related around, you know, cultures and censorship around things that are not that culture. To answer some of your questions, where do I think this will end up? I don't think all of these things will be talked about in 10 years. I think some of them will not be talked about anymore. I think some of them will still exist, and I think they will coexist. If you wanted to try to get mass adoption for any of these things, well, the solution is simple. You have to actually just basically do everything that Twitter is doing a little bit differently and a little bit better, but at their scale. Like, you're never going to have a hope of getting people to move to Twitter unless you throw tens of millions, maybe billions of dollars at trying to get gravity for your platform. And otherwise, now this is the most interesting part for all of us, what we're actually trying to do is figure out if, by designing systems the way we're designing them, if we can provide users with new powers that they didn't have before. If they can do things they couldn't do on Twitter, even if Elon added the feature. If they can, you know what I mean? Like, for example, like the crowd making the algorithm like they could in PubKey app. Like, that's not something you're going to find in Twitter. Matter of fact, Elon was just hating on hashtags yesterday and telling people to stop using them. And so he has no intention of putting power into the user's hands for deciding what they see. He's trying to become perfect at showing them what he thinks they want to see. And so that's a different path. I know I'm rambling a bit, but the way I see it is, as far as PubKey is the only one I can speak for directly, I am just trying to see if we can actually take this design and give people powers they didn't have before. For example, if you get kicked off of, you know, a platform, now you don't have to lose your followers or your feeds or anything. You can, as long as you're using PubKey compatible applications. If you want to, you know, experiment with being the algorithm instead of being a slave to one, now you can do that in PubKey app. And there are other ways that we're just going to try to show, here are things you can't do in other platforms that they would never let you do or give you the powers to do. And hopefully some of those things are very interesting to people and we get some gravity ourselves, and then maybe we compete with the majors that way someday. But this is a very uphill battle, right? Because mostly people just want convenience. They want stuff for free. They want stuff that's fast. They want stuff that's convenient. And they want network effect. And so bootstrapping is a huge issue as well.
Massive, massive issue. And in your mind,
I mean, we all thought Nostr won, right? Like 2 years ago, it was like, wow, Jack's talking about it. Elon's banning it by mistake. You know, it was like, and then all of a sudden there was like a million users or whatever it was. And then Blue Sky came and they got 20 million. And we're like, oh, okay. Like there's nuance here because now they both exist. And now we want to exist and others are going to want to as well. And so how are we going to differentiate? Are we going to differentiate across cultures, across features? What?
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to get on the feature side, because that's what, having observed Nostr, I've been on Nostr since July of 22, so over 2 years now, and to see the development there and how much better it is than when it was back then when I first got on it is extremely impressive, and I think it's pretty clear over in Nostr that like the social media use case is only the tip of the iceberg. If you talk to people like Million from Primal and others, like what we're beginning to see with things like Nostr Wallet Connect and these data vending machines that connect you with AI agents, social media.
A lot of this stuff is just web stuff, though. A lot of this stuff is not necessarily like using PKI or public key identity and leveraging it. It's just recreating the things that we already have in other places to some degree. I don't want to like shit talk, but like, This is a tricky thing with people who aren't involved in peer-to-peer web stuff. It's like the shitcoin world. Like, I could impress you by lying to you and by saying various things that we made that already exist in other places that aren't actually novel. But I just don't think that that's going to help anyone, you know? And so, like, when you talk about, like, let me put it this way. If Nostr wants to realize being more than a social media thing, they will not be able to ignore that they don't have an identity system. They will have to actually address that issue. And so far, they don't want to do anything that breaks the current protocol. And so even though you can probably get Nostr guys to admit that what we're doing with public key domains would be an improvement on Nostr. In other words, if they switched to that method for discovery, they would solve a lot of their problems and be able to actually sincerely say the sentence you just said, where it's the tip of the iceberg and we can connect across many applications for many use cases. It's not as true when you have disposable private keys, I mean, disposable keys in general, and you have to always have a trusted place to kind of find somebody.
It's a DNS is key to what you guys are doing at
PubKey. Yeah, I definitely think so. And the thing is, what we're doing with PubKey is like, yes, with the PubKey core stuff is, well, as I explained, but the PubKey app stuff is separate. What I mean by that is Nostr could literally adopt only how we're doing the DNS stuff, and they could keep the rest of the stuff the same. It would be a breaking change, but they could do that. But because we don't have to do that, and somebody has to demonstrate the stack, when we're building our servers, which we call home servers instead of relays, and when we're designing our stack, we throw away the parts of Nostr that we think aren't needed now that we have this capability. Whereas Nostr doesn't want to throw anything away. They're just looking for a way to keep things intact. So they have some kind of technical debt there, essentially, that's kind of got their hands tied. And they end up making these kind of justifying arguments for this instead of embracing the problem.
So let's pull this into like the atomic economy concept. Like, How will PubKey digital identity plug into this and then blend into Bitcoin as well?
So the overview for atomic economy is simply, you know, the mission statement of Synonym is that we want to provide people an alternative to big tech, big banks, and big states. And so that means, you know, Bitcoin and Lightning have a lot of the big bank stuff covered, but you know, maybe further down the line, we would get more into credit related things like you've heard me talk about in the past with gift tokens or, you know, other forms of credit. We have some ideas about how to establish credit mechanisms or credit systems that do not use blockchains. We can talk about that later if you want, but we're going to build a proof of concept next year for that. But the idea being that, okay, so we have ideas about how to replace legacy finance, and I won't get into them because your whole audience knows most of them, whether it be eCash, Bitcoin, Lightning, any of the things that you're, you know, excited about and following, some combination of those, right? And then for big tech, that's the pub key stack, right? So we're saying no longer do you need to trust these walled gardens. You have a credible exit with our the way we're doing our pub key keys. And we're going to be building, you know, applications and servers that people can exit from in a safe way and choose alternative providers. So now we're kind of challenging big tech. And then finally with big state, this is partially the pub key stuff. And then the semantic graph stuff, basically a little bit longer term. My goal is to get into ideas for basically having self-regulating systems. So now that you have these keys as anchors for both files, you know, posts and for keys for people, you can now start creating these substrates of mechanisms for people to be able to have, you know, if this person does the wrong thing, then this action automatically happens, like these deterministic outcomes. And you could have these, one term I've been using is spontaneous governance, where people match across the things they agree on instead of the things they disagree on. And so where you have, you know, this tagging system, for example, in PubKey app, if you wanted to match and find all the people that, you know, are tagged by your friends as Bitcoiners, you could do that. And you could now create a network out of that system. And that when you do that, you can make things deterministically happen, basically digitizing and programming trust into digital systems. So this way you have self-regulation, you have reputational consequences that are all digital. So it's just finding a way to do everything except violence in a digital system, because that's the only physical thing that's part of the economy. Is violence is always a part of the economy and you can't digitize it. You could certainly have digital things that resulted in violent outcomes like drone assassinations and such, but this is getting to weirdo fantasy stuff. I'm just simply talking about Bitcoiners thought hyper-Bitcoinization would fix the world, but they never gave anybody a picture of what the world looks like once we delete those things. Like big banks, big tech, and big states do serve a purpose. So there's some minimal reason they exist. And if we minimize them or delete them or mitigate them somehow, it's because we've replaced that elsewhere, right? So I'm just trying to say, here is my vision for one way, at least one way, that you have a total economic loop where you have like a Bitcoin wallet that supports multiple payment methods. You have applications that you can now buy things in that wallet peer-to-peer from people. And that's the longer-term goal with PubKey app, is that by the end of next year, people will be able to digitally monetize anything they want to peer-to-peer without a third-party involvement. And so that's, you're only trusting servers just literally for resources to provide your data to others. So yeah, that's the kind of atomic economy idea. It's just to say, let's take these three concepts and make an alternative digital economy that people can opt into and that we can all develop together over time.
Going back to Abu Dhabi Finance Week and the speed at which the governments seem to be keen on bringing the digital identity. I mean, we've seen laws where in Australia, UK, I don't think any laws particularly about digital identity, but pretty strict censorship laws. And obviously here in the U.S., post-Patriot Act, digital surveillance has increased significantly and is pervasive at this point. That's what I wonder, like, timeline. What I'm trying to get at here is, like, timeline of, like, how fast do these systems need to be built out and somewhat widely adopted before it's too late? Because the government seemed pretty motivated.
Well, we can't control how fast we can build them. We also can't even control how much resources people want to fund to build them. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, we could talk about it and we could hype it and try to get people interested in doing it, but ultimately the market will drive how much investment goes into this space. Luckily, you know, our company is owned by Tether and they're funding us to do this. And, you know, we've been working on creating this atomic economy, like this first version of the full loop, you might say. It'll be 5 years in a few months. And Tether has been funding that. And not only that, but they approved a budget for me last week to hire 8 more people. So we'll be roughly 30 people by the end of next year, all just doing research to build this totally speculative alternative economy. And that, I think, is, you know, a vote of confidence for me, for my team, for the idea. But it's only provided at the, you know, benefit or the success of Tether. There's nobody else funding which is, this. Even which Web5 is got
a bit ironic.
The Web5 application stuff. Web5, the TBD stuff, they got most of their funding pulled. And then Noster is mostly funded by like Jack and OpenSats and smaller things like this. Like, this could all disappear so quickly with just a change in the tide. You know, like, we're lucky to have, you know, these people investing in these things. We're lucky that Jack spawned off Blue Sky before he left, even though I think that that project's going to be a disappointment because just the culture, essentially.
Yeah, no, it's ironic that Tether's funding you, considering they're the middle of many theories that they're trying to usher in the government-controlled CBDC future, which digital identity would be part of.
I don't think that's true. I think that people are saying that just don't know Paulo. Granted, Paulo is not the only one making decisions. There's other people that own Tether, but I don't have special information for you. I don't really talk too much to them about their own strategies and stuff, but I'll say that like Paulo is actually a good person. He actually, like, we talked about benevolence earlier. I do think his goal is benevolence. I do think that him funding, you know, approving funding for us, for Hole Punch, for RGB projects, for so many things, is because they're throwing things against the wall to see what sticks, but they're all things that they're just trying to like optimistically and idealistically help society. And I think that's amazing. You know?
I do as well. I've only had Paulo on the show once, and I got the impression that he's extremely genuine. And you look at what Tether's doing with a lot of their proceeds, mainly buying Bitcoin and funding projects like yours. And I find the whole,
and even more crazy stuff, like they're investing in they're like just on another planet now. Like, they're investing in AI and in server farms and all kinds of things. So like they're just on another level now.
Yeah, it is crazy to see how far they've come, like to the point where they're like a geopolitical.
I remember hanging out with
company.
Phil Potter in, you know, in live chat on Mumble, you know, trading, talking to traders on Bitfinex. And, you know, I remember Phil Potter being like, when Ethereum was giving him a headache, he's like, I should have never listed this fucking coin. Like, that's like, Bitfinex went from like being hacked multiple times in its past and recovering to like just being hanging out with the trader boys in chats to being like Tether and the biggest company in, I don't know, fucking world, man. As far as like crypto
literally,
influence
I think,
goes.
I think literally the most profitable company per employee that's ever existed.
Oh, definitely. I would not be surprised at all. Tether is not big. It's not a lot of people. Although they're adding a lot lately, so I don't know what their size is now.
This may ruffle some feathers with all the strategic Bitcoin reserve people that are bullish on it. I'm bullish on it, I'll be frank with them. Like, I think it's a good thing for America. But I think Bitfinex should get their Bitcoin back. Like, there's big talk about just like taking the confiscated Bitcoin and turning that into a strategic reserve. Like, Bitcoin was stolen from Bitfinex wrongly. It was discovered by the U.S. government. Like, it should be returned.
Is that whatever that? I haven't talked to Paul about that in a long time. But if I remember the last time it came up, it's an ongoing process. In other words, they're having to go through all kinds of hoops to try to get their Bitcoin, and I don't think there's anything to, you know, anything you or I could say or do or influence in that regard. And yeah, but I do think that confiscating things from people that weren't taken, you know, from illegal crimes, in other words, how could you ever confiscate Bitfinex's Bitcoin? That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, so it's just, I think it's just bureaucracy and maybe not even having a proper way to give them their Bitcoin back.
Yeah. Yeah. The government, be clear, in government's defense, they haven't articulated that they're going to do anything one way or the other. But I've been a long champion of that for the last couple of years since, I don't even think it was RazzleCon, but since they recovered the Bitcoin. I find it hard to believe that it was RazzleCon.
I just think it's impressive that they actually did it, you know, that they actually recovered. They actually, for people that granted, there are people who kind of panicked and sold and things like this on the day where the Bitfinex happened and they were damaged permanently. But for anyone that actually held out and participated in their share program and their Leo program and all that stuff, like everybody made out just fine if they trusted them. So they did their best to recover, and I think that's commendable.
Yeah. It is it's such a fascinating industry. Like you're saying, from a mumble chat to where it is now. Like,
what's going to happen this time, man? Who's going to be our sacrifice this cycle?
There's do you have any ideas?
The only focal point is Master. You know, that's I don't know of anything else going on. I don't follow Shitcoin World. I don't know if they have some kind of big Ponzi brewing or what. It doesn't seem like we're going to get any type of huge blowout with ordinals or any of that area. So where's the maybe we'll get a sacrifice, but you know, if there were going to be one, I would think probably the Master shareholders would be the people.
Yeah.
They're the biggest target at the moment, I think.
I mean, there are, it is insane how much Bitcoin they're buying.
Well, 2%. It could just be like, you know, the premium gets zapped in one day or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? When we finally top, maybe the market actually knows and they zap the premium in one day and people get wiped out and crying and losing all their savings or something like this, you know. But I don't follow it closely enough to predict. I don't know closely enough the design of the loans and things to know when things could go bad. Like, for example, his average has got to be going up a lot, his cost basis. And I imagine if we hit his cost basis, there's tension there. Something has to give.
From what I understand, like you said, I've paid, like, I'm not some master. I'm, like, not in the irresponsibly long master X group. And I'm not, like, a master shareholder. But, like, following the dynamics, I think there is a lot of FUD around it. It seems definitely is risky to an extent, but I don't think it's as risky. I think the way he's structuring the credit and particularly the duration gives him a lot of breathing room to.
It's just hard to predict. Like, for example, like Trump just came out of nowhere saying, oh, I'm going to do this whole tariff thing. And that's how he's going to handle some of his strategies. He came out in favor of the longshoremen and being anti-automation for the ports. Like, Trump could take a stance that to the public may seem logical, but to master shareholders or, you know, Sailor might not. And because they're a publicly held company and because, you know, the government is going to be able to filter any of that money any way they want to, any way they can justify. And so if for some reason Trump decides to take a stance of something like, we cannot have corporations trying to exploit and undermine the value of the dollar. And the master strategy is something that if more corporations did, could become tragic and, you know, harm many people. So anybody that's doing this scheme is going to automatically have a 50% tax on unrealized gains. And this is the way they roll out the first test on unrealized gains is just for somebody that they can target like this doing a weird thing. And that something like that could happen. You know, like it could just be all of a sudden now you thought you played the system? Well, yeah, you played the system, but we're going to take half. You know, like it's – you never know.
Just turn off the buy button. To be clear, I think MicroStrategy is – I do think there's a possibility that they've tapped into a hack of credit markets, and I think that's most likely the case, but my outlandish.
Well, they obviously have. The question is whether that hack could be plugged, that's all.
Yeah.
And I think it could.
My more outlandish MicroStrategy theory is that they are building the strategic reserve. That is a...
Well, I think I made a meme actually with the butterfly guy, and he's holding up the master logo, and he says, "Is this a strategic reserve?" Because yeah, that's the fear, right? Is that maybe they won't do what I just described and tax it? Maybe they'll just literally take it and they'll say, "No, you can't do this, Michael. This is bullshit. You think you're just gonna like game the system? No, give me that Bitcoin. Here's your money back. Go back to actually running a business." You know, like you never know what they're going to do. That could be painted in all kinds of horrible, oppressive government thing ways. So it's unlikely. But I can't imagine every permutation of what the government or the market could design to relieve the pressure of Sailor's hack.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they just let him go. Maybe it keeps going up forever. Who knows? It's going up forever. Laura.
Maybe
he told
maybe
us that, you know.
You know what he wants, what he needs. I'm guessing is to achieve like escape velocity. He needs it to be like where he bought so much Bitcoin before the big players did that like we just had a whole new price level and he just has nothing to worry about ever anymore about any of this. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, now the floor is 250K. His average is at 75K and all the corporations are buying and now it's like $1 million Bitcoin and he's just that guy who did that move that everybody talks about for 100 years. I hope that's what happens for him. I don't have any ill will to people trying to, you know, figure out the angles on the system, at least as long as they're not harming anybody. But yeah, I mean, I have no issue with Michael Saylor making me bloody rich if that's what he can figure out doing. You know, it's just I'm not going to like become part of the movement or start compromising my own, you know, interests and perspectives on things just to support that.
Yeah. No, it's fast. It's just fun to watch play out. And again, like I said earlier, it's crazy to see where we are today from you getting Roger Ver or you flipping him off. And
to him
no,
being
he flipped you off.
Extradited you off. Him avoiding being extradited now. That's
yeah. It's crazy. and I think that's another thing like to reflect. Like I remember watching your live streams back on Exotica. And that was not too long ago in the grand scheme of things, like 8 years ago. Whatever.
2017. I mean,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that Roger Ver was streamed live on Exotica too.
Look what's happened in 7 years and just project that forward. And that's why it's important that we have people like you working on these sovereign tools that give people the ability to opt out of the state oppression and use Bitcoin correctly. Understand it correctly.
I hope it's important. I don't know. I haven't proven it's important yet, but I feel like it's important to at least make new mistakes and build things that other people haven't done. And I very much think that our team has been focused on doing that, on making sure that the designs that we've chosen and the paths that we've chosen for our roadmap are things that other people aren't doing. And we need to figure out if they're worth doing.
Yeah. What's your biggest worry for Bitcoin right now? Or worried about mining pool centralization? What about FPPS?
No, my only concern is core devs, honestly. Yeah. I don't think Bitcoin Core is evil. I don't want to fire Bitcoin Core. I just think that, like, I don't know. I work with engineers. I work with designers. I know what it means for people to like have babies, like when a project is their baby and when their biases, they figure out ways to convey their biases as if they're not. And they just end up in this kind of trap where they think that they're doing something that is benevolent or for everybody else's sake, but underneath it's really just for their own sake. And core devs are not any different than other humans in that regard. If anything, they're a little bit worse because they're engineers and they have this they're compelled to demonstrate their prowess. They must demonstrate their ability. Everybody like wants a new challenge, right? Like when you're good at things, and you know, this is saying like if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? Like you always want to be improving, learning, demonstrating what you've learned, and proving to other people that you've achieved these things. And you can't do that if you don't ship code. You know, if you're an engineer, that code has to go into the app, it has to go into the user's hands, they have to do the thing, or everything you did is just a LARP, it's just worthless. And that's very frustrating for a core developer making things that they have no guarantee of getting into the user's hands, particularly speculative things like softworks and such, and BIPs. Like, it's totally unhealthy to go into a BIP situation like with an expectation of success. Your only expectation is, I think that I have a unique experience in the world where if I gather my ideas and I put them in one place, they could be valuable to others someday. So they don't have to waste the same time that I did learning these things and they can skip ahead. That has to be your attitude. If that's not your attitude, then you're just going to live in disappointment. And unfortunately, many of the core devs are like, they have incentives too. They have grants, they have reputation among their peers. It's a kind of an academic situation. So like they have a lot of incentives. They have a lot of things they're juggling with and struggling with to want Bitcoin to be the way they want it to be and put their mark on it somehow. And it's not even things that have to be evil or spooky or spot, you know, government influence, just simply human incentive to take pride in your work is really all it is, and demonstrate your work, demonstrate your ability. Yeah. And so that's my fear, is that the whole, like we started the conversation with, this whole idea that like covenants is like a lot of people like it, and this whole idea that like it's needed at all, this whole idea that UTXOs actually scale Bitcoin. Like, there's so much of this that we've kind of elevated to a level of just hot air that just really should be much more, you know, down to earth and just talked about in a much more pragmatic way and a much less certain way. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is, besides you're saying that, it's like the, I'm just thinking about what I said about like, it's big conversation right now. There's a lot of people out there screaming. So it like seems.
It really isn't though. It's like 10 people.
OpCTV.
Yeah. it's like 10 people that even care, and then 10 more people that they're harassing about it. And then, you know, a few hundred people watching closely, and then a few thousand people that are even aware it's happening. That's it. Yeah. It's super, super tiny. It is not real. It's not a real movement. It's not a real anything. The only thing that makes it seem real is that the BIP, for people that know, understand it, the code that for people that can audit it, seems to make sense and seems to work. That's the only legitimacy here, is that they actually made a thing. They, to some degree, can demonstrate it, and it can be, it's reviewable. But all the other stuff is just wild claims.
Yeah. This has been fascinating. I always love catching up with you. We got to do it more often. Anything else we should touch on before we wrap up here?
I don't know. I'm sure there's other stuff going on, but yeah, I guess I'll just summarize and see if something comes out. But, you know, we've been working hard on Synonym stuff, and we are a Bitcoin only company. I'm certainly not trying to kill Bitcoin. I think that the idea is absurd. You know, if people are triggered by my BIP.
How dare you?
I say. Bitcoin Magazine called me, short-sighted, that my BIP was short-sighted. It's like, man, like, I don't know. How long do you have to be here to not be short-sighted? Like, how long do you have to wait to make a real BIP before people can take you seriously? It's just such nonsense. I don't know.
2.1 quadrillion Bitcoin out there, freaks.
Yep, 2.1 quadrillion units. Call them what you want. Call them Bitcoin. Call them Satoshis. I don't actually care that much. I just think that people that make applications might do a little bit better for their users if they try this approach.
How dare you? How dare you?
I'm going to have to, now that we have AI, I'm like thinking, oh, I could probably go and compile all of my old good morning tweets and turn it into like a long form, like book or something, or some series of articles, and actually have like a cohesive view on all of my takes on Bitcoin that actually I can share with other people so they can understand where I'm coming from. Because while people think I do this for engagement, I don't. I'm not controversial for engagement. As a matter of fact, the engagement mostly leads to me muting and blocking more people. I'm not trying to get some sort of engagement. I'm trying to actually be useful, and trying to share my experiences and observations with the world, because I do think I have a very unique perspective on things from my experience here, between the time that I've been here, the projects I've worked on, the battles I've been through, you know, the people I've met, the products I've built. This is just all real experience, and it's not just like a core dev. It's not just an engineer trying to speculate on code. It's like real world working with users, learning from them. I don't think the BIP is crazy. I don't think that what we're doing with Synonym is crazy either, as far as our atomic economy vision. It's just big. It's just very speculative. I'm just rambling now. Sorry.
No, I was going to co-sign it as somebody, as an individual who learned a lot from you in the early years and continues to learn. I appreciate your perspective and you putting it out there, because I do think it's important.
Well, I appreciate your patience and taking me seriously.
The conversation does get lame out there. Bitcoin Twitter, I think Alex, who I'm actually recording with tomorrow morning, has said this a couple of times in the last few weeks, but like Bitcoin Twitter is like dead. It's not what it was back in the 2014 to 2019 era.
Blame Nosser. I don't think you can do, you can't really do Bitcoin Twitter without also doing Nostr now, right? Like you have to kind of be in both places. And Nostr isn't the same for some Bitcoiners. Like I don't feel comfortable on Nostr. Like I tried to, you know, I only just started using it maybe a month or two ago, just as research mostly to compare it to PubKey app, but or to compare the other like Primo and all these different apps to see where, what the state of things was. But like when I'm there, like none of the content is for me. None of the topics are for me. It's all like a lot of Nostr circle jerking, like we're so great, Nostr's the future, kind of just like with Bitcoin. And so it's like Bitcoin Nostr. And I just don't find that to be a signal, you know. Maybe for new people it's great, I don't know. But for me, it's just, it feels like I'm in the wrong place when I'm hanging out there. And it's even worse on Blue Sky. When I go on Blue Sky, I'm like, whoa, I am definitely in the wrong place. These are not my people.
I've never been on Blue Sky.
I don't plan on that. You have to try it. You have to try it. It's amazing. You're not going to believe it. It's like walking into Kamalaville and like walking into Wokeville. It's like you wouldn't believe it. It's like literally you, like the first things you'll see in the feed are going to be like ridiculously hateful things about Trump. And it's just, I don't know. It's just a whole alternate reality, really.
Yeah, that's the sense I've been picking up on it, having heard other people talk about it. I don't know if
it's worth like actually being aware too of like seeing the culture in action. Like you'll see, like there's a lot of like posts from the people that are enthusiasts about the tech as well. At least maybe for me, because I followed some or whatever. I don't know if it's that way in general, but you'll see even like the nature of their conversations is another reality. Like they're talking about ways to like censor properly and, you know, create safe spaces and these kinds of things. And, you know, being, they want to be really, really hateful to people that disagree with them. And it's just, it's an unhealthy, it feels really unhealthy to me, very toxic situation. But they probably think that I'm toxic for saying that. They maybe even feel very safe there and very happy, but it's not for me.
Yeah, I wonder if we're observing the world just fracturing into these digital subculture. Not that these digital subcultures didn't already exist. Obviously, we've had things like 4chan and on the other end of the spectrum for many years, but I don't know.
This is partly why I portray PubKey as trying to match people, because like, say for example, like, what if Nostr is just the Nostr tag, right? And that's all it really is. It's just a category of people and a topic. Like you could really, in a very significant way, you could almost say that's what Nostr is. It's the Bitcoin Nostr topic chat room, right? And in a large way, at least functionally. And you could do similar with Blue Sky for leftists, things like this. Like what if now in PubKey app, all I do is I have leftist, LGBTQ, woke, Trump. We have all these things as semantics, and we are tagging people with these semantics and tagging their posts with these semantics. Now Nostr is just looking at the Nostr tag. You know what I mean? Now Blue Sky is just looking at the Blue Sky tag or the set of tags that represents the behaviors that you like in Blue Sky. And so that's one of the differences with PubKey app is I'm trying to say, I don't know what's best for people. I don't know what the best algorithm is for you. I don't know who you should be friends with. But I do know how social graphs work. I do know how like webs of trust work and how semantics work. And I'm pretty sure that if we create the system for you, you can connect with anybody on any level you need to, and you don't need multiple platforms to do that. So that's maybe one way we're differentiating is saying, well, let people figure out how to connect with each other themselves, because that way we can figure out how they actually want to connect instead of telling them like, oh, use Nostr. It's the future. It's, you know, it's uncensorable, which it's totally censorable. Every relay should be censoring. And if they're not careful, they can get in a lot of trouble if they don't. Anyway, rant over.
Yeah. Well, I guess, is this from a UX perspective, I guess? No, it made me think of like Steve Jobs in his quote, or maybe it was Henry Ford. They would have had like at the end of the gist of the ideas that both
of you ask people what they would invent, they'd invent like,
words, people don't know what they want. Like, do you have to present them with?
To some degree. Yeah, those are both two different quotes, but they're related, I think, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I feel pretty strongly that way. Sometimes on the team, you know, I'll get someone on the team saying, you know, I think you're totally wrong about tags, for example, about semantic tagging, about social graphing. I just think it's a non-feature. I had somebody on the team tell me. And it's just like, you don't understand the feature. You know what I mean? I have total faith in the feature and I can explain it and I've explained it to others and they understand it. And you're just going to have to trust me. You know what I mean? Like, this is something where I don't think that users are going to fully understand what it is until we put it in their hands. If I ask the user, hey, would you prefer if Twitter worked this way? They'll say, maybe, no, I don't know, yes. But that's not how you have to actually take the time to create the whole user experience and surrounding user experience to give that idea an honest chance. Because you can't just show people one feature. You have to show them, I learned this from working at Exotica, like, and working on that platform. I thought, oh yeah, of course, you know, chat, you know, girls want to be able to be private and have Bitcoin and not be censored. It's a huge problem for them. They use all these shady payment processors, blah, 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 blah. But what I learned was, yeah, that's true. But as soon as you start offering people a video platform, they have very high expectations about the feature set. Because they've been using video platforms that have been built for 20 years, adding features every month, adding features for 20 years. And now they come to your platform and you don't have this one feature they use every day. And if you don't add that feature in the next week or two, they're gone. And so you have to create a certain stature of a project to actually bootstrap. You can't just go out there and a lot of engineers and a lot of Silicon Valley types will say, you just got to ship, 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 iterate, iterate, ship, ship, ship. But there's another strategy I believe in, which is actually completing a whole thought and then shipping it. Because sometimes the whole thought is much more intricate and complicated and requires a support system to even understand it correctly.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love it. John, this has been great. Where, we'll link to everything. We'll link to you. Synonym.to, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin error log handle, wherever you want to look for me on social medias, and then pubkey.app if you want to see a little sneak preview of the app, pubkey.org if you want to look at the code and, you know, build something with it. And we also have been doing, we just had one today, public monthly dev call. So if anybody wants, we demo what we've, you know, worked on in the past month and newest features and things like this, and help people like learn what they can build with it as well. So if you want to run your own public key domain and try that out, any of this stuff, it's all open source.
It's PubKey without the E, correct?
Correct. PubKey.
Yeah. Go check it out, John. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
A response to a tweet about digital identity turned into a conversation about core development. Soft forks, covenants, identity, UX. It was great. You've got breath.
Happy to. Happy to say, happy to comment on anything I actually have any experience with. And otherwise, I will make a disclaimer that I don't. but yeah, I don't have experience with the strategic reserve stuff. I just haven't been following it closely, even the master stuff. So I disclaim to your audience, if they don't like something I said about any of that, I am speaking ignorantly. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert.
Thank you for the disclaimer. We'll do it again at some point in the future. Peace and love, freaks.
All right. Thank you, sir.